morning, everybody. Welcome to the next session of the Empowered Teams podcast. I'd like to welcome Phil, Jez, and Nick, our team today. It's going to give a thrilling discussion. As always, guys, we make a promise that we work at bringing content that's relevant, that's interesting, that has meaning. We like to generate a conversation and not present at you. If you find this interesting, then please really help us out by subscribing below and pressing like. That really does help us. And our promise to you is that we will really work on our content and making things relevant to you guys. So the subject for today, team, is in essence, we just talked about is the fifth industrial revolution. And the fifth industrial revolution sets out here that we've got worldwide development in technology, and particularly around AI and data, some of the most amazing things that are taking up place there, which you guys are more expert on this than I am. But coming alongside that, in order to be able to leverage, if you want, the value that comes from this technology, is an investment and a requirement in a human-centric strategy that all businesses and organizations need to invest in. I think that it would be good to kick this off, Bill, with that story, the kind of summarizes the challenge that we're off, and then from you to the rest of the team.
Yeah, happy to do that. And I've also just noticed I got a bit of background noise of seagulls. So if you can hear that, it's because I'm based on down in the South Coast. And I think it's all the seagulls have decided to wake up this morning. I think it's nice and sunny. So I apologize for the background noise. Yeah, I was the link that I've got between the kind of like this idea around power skills and AI was formed from a debate that I listened to on Radio 4 in the UK. I'm a bit of a politics geek. So the conversation started around the future of education, and it was the divide between the state and private and public funded education. And they had a guy on the podcast, there's a chap called Sir Anthony Seldon. And he's the chancellor or the vice chancellor of one of the UK's biggest private schools, but also he's a historian. He's written biographies about Churchill and Thatcher and all sorts over his time. So he's quite an interesting guy. And they were talking, he was talking about the education models. And right at the end of this chat, he said, anyway, we need to forget all of that because education is going to rapidly change really quickly. And he said, well, why is that? And he said, well, because of AI. And there's this old guy, he's kind of in his 80s, suddenly talking about AI. And the guy said, you know, the interview, so, well, you know, can you say a bit more about this? And he said, well, what I teach at the moment is the ability to learn formulas, learn history through kind of repetition and note taking, and then get into exam and kind of regurgitate all of that. And AI will do all that. My students don't need that now. The biggest issue we got at the moment is trying to work out whether they've used AI or not to complete their essay or the homework. So actually, the challenge is we just need to scrap the current syllabus. We need to move on to teaching what is really relevant and what really matters in the 21st century, which is emotional intelligence, soft skills, or as we've kind of bracketed it as power skills. And he made a really kind of powerful play to say that actually this is what he's now trying to lobby governments around the world about, changing the curriculum to say we need to move away from this now, because we can't continue to battle with saying students, you can't use AI, when actually we might as well all be bloody using it. And then teaching things like communications, critical thinking, all of those skills to complement your use of AI. And even now, I think some of the more progressive teachers, as I should say, are incorporating AI. So they are saying, use this prompt and then critique what comes back from it. So So they're teaching about that. But that's then teaching all the critical skills. That's using your ability to be literate, using modern technology. It's about communication. How do you work in teams? How do you problem solve? So I thought, yeah, that would, for me, that really kind of sparked, because I think that's where I believe that we will rapidly be moving in within the industry. So I think it'll be very quickly, like I was looking at something today, you could use Copilot for work, doing your whole day planning, for instance. There's a lot of kind of entrepreneurs, I think, I'm sure there's other businesses that are out there at the moment that are using this, are just handing their day's task list to ChatGPT and just saying, work this out for me. Tell me where I need to focus. And not just on what where they need to focus, but also saying, you're better in the morning, Phil, at writing. You're better in the afternoon because you're knackered just doing a bit of research. So I've timetabled these two things in. Yeah. You're better in the morning at having meetings. So actually I've timetabled your meetings in here. And don't forget, Phil, you promised that you drop off the laundry in the afternoon. And these things are starting to become established. And I just suddenly thought, yeah, this is what the future is going to be. So how do we start? That's my sort of putting out there for the podcast discussion at the moment. Is it barking mad? Am I in the kind of right direction? And what are people's thoughts?
I think if you look at Catherine Bell in Converged and what she said about the fifth industrial revolution, is that there's a couple of things. That first of all, the technology and advancements in, you know, Internet of Things and all the environments of this are moving so fast that the legislation and, let's say, more governmental conservative methods of change are the ones that are going to be falling behind and lagging behind, right? So if you look at like the education sector, it's extremely difficult to change the education sector from a political or legal perspective. Where it can change is in those innovators, those leaders, those inspirers as the teachers, and the assessment criteria and the way they teach within the assessment criteria they have. But then there's the kind of second point on that, is that yes, we can explode AI, and yes, we can all use it, and it, you know, it's not going to be far off from actually replacing some of the mundane tasks that we have, repetitive stuff in business. However, what costs does that come? And when you look at that human-centric approach and a circular economy, it's, if we expand it too fast, we're going to be burning loads of, you know, consumption wall power with loads of bias and loads of biased data and incorrect data to maybe get the wrong answer. So I think we need to have people who can think differently about the way we use it, the way we work, and not just try to lift and shift the ways of work we've been doing into using AI.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. The one thing that I think the one thing that governments and states and academic institutions are going to be challenges is the rate of change. So I agree with you, Nick. And I think the problem that you've got now is you've got a 21st century with a 19th century legislature. I can't say that word. And now this is where they're rapidly butting up against each other now, isn't it? And it's kind of like, actually, we're here. We want to act as this kind of break, because that's how we conditionally operated and worked. And everything else is coming past like this as a kind of a rate of knots. But actually, I think you make a really good point around there's more to AI than just bias. The whole sustainability criteria, the whole change to the ethos of the modern, modern workplace, and are we training ourselves, the students that are coming through, business leaders, in what changes do they need to be making to accommodate that change? And I think that's where it keeps coming back to me all of the time, is much more around that. Those are kind of power skills and emotional intelligence skills than it is at those hard skills. That's my kind of main contention, I think.
I was going to say, it's interesting when you talk about that, because we've spoken before about AI being another team member, right? And I think being part of the team. I think over your business career and your life, you have to learn and adapt to deal with new people, new work colleagues, new teams, new emotions, new types of people that you've perhaps never engaged with in your life previously, right? As you go through life, this happens all the time. And we have to learn skills to adapt to those kind of people. I think if we think about AI in the same way, it's the same problem, right? We all of a sudden have this new team member that can go away and do all this really great stuff really quickly, and maybe not well at the moment, but, you know, could do this stuff really quickly and come back with us. But they have not necessarily emotions that we have to contend with, but they have ways of working and ways of gathering and researching information that we need to be aware of and understand. You know, if I ask ChatGPT or another AI an exam question, it brings me back a generic kind of combination of all of those answers. Unless I ask it in the correct way to provide me, you know, direct sources, it won't do that. So you have to learn how to work with this new team member. It would be just like having a junior member in our team and saying, hey, can you go away and do this? Not explain what we're asking for them properly. They come back and we go, well, that's not quite what I meant. Could you do it this way? Or could you go and add this to it? It's learning how to deal with that. People see AI as this, you know, technology piece of information they can do with, without thinking about this is something you have to interact with in a certain way to get a certain result. And I think like, it's that awareness and the skills of how do we do that, and how do we teach that mindset of it's not just technology that will get us the faster results. So go on, Jez.
No, I've just listened to everything that Phil said and what you've said. I mean, there's so much stuff in there, so I've got to go back on where my head was at a minute ago. I think there's bigger things to consider. Like, I think on one of the previous podcasts, we talk about the actual statistics around training budgets focused on 75% hard skills and 25% soft skills, right? That was there 50 years ago. It's exactly the same today. Going to Phil's point, you know, government legislators are not going to push the change at the pace required to start training, you know, kids in schools from an early age, primary up through into universities, around on soft skills, right? They're just not doing it. I don't know why they're not doing it, but they're not doing it. We know they're not doing it because we're working with universities today, and we're the ones going up there running workshops around soft skills, right? So, you know, that's the first problem. And it doesn't seem to matter how much change, you know, comes at us. We're still not answering to it. So that's a huge issue. My second issue, which I keep thinking about as well, is when you get a new toy that you don't know how to use properly, you either waste its capacity, i.e. you put batteries in a toy that you think you know how to use, right? Let's call it a robot. You don't know how to use it properly. What happens is the batteries run out before you've actually got the best out of it. All I see is at the moment, people aren't understanding that, you know, poor data in, bad AI, and data science out. The end insights terrible. We're running at this at such a pace trying to use AI tooling, but not really so much to do the heavy lifting and shit like Phil was talking about, which is what we should be doing with it. Therefore, its capability and power isn't wasted. I just see it's being massively wasted at the moment. And then to your point, Nick, having a huge impact from a sustainable perspective. Like, that's a massive issue. We're all using it, not really knowing what to do with it. We don't have the soft skills to deal with it. We're trying to get insights out of which are typically, I expect, going to be wrong. And what I really fear about it is that there's, from an ethical point of view or a data privacy point of view, there's going to be something that's going to happen very soon in a large organization that's going to be an issue. And then all of a sudden, we're going to be concentrating on the legislation around AI and how it's used and who should be using it, you know, because we're already seeing that there are people in industry that are now given the function because they have a strong understanding of AI and how to use it and when to use it, who are taking that lead role on, but we're still not concentrating on the actual overall workforce. And now it's in the public domain, so everybody can crack on with it. It's a huge, we haven't got the fourth industrial revolution sorted yet, let alone this fifth one. Well, no, that's true though, right? You know, talk about the fourth industrial revolution. I mean, I was looking at it about what it was about, you know, bringing together the integration of the physical, digital and biological worlds, right? I mean, how many years would it take to actually get a handle on even 25% of that? And now all of a sudden we're straight into the fifth industrial revolution where humans and machines work in harmony.
That's interesting. Sorry, Tyrod, can I? Yeah. I was just going to say, it's only a couple of years ago, less than that, that everyone's focus in the kind of CDO world and the data world was around data cultures, wasn't it? We were all about raising the awareness. And we haven't solved that problem yet. That's a good challenge for us. Yeah, we were nowhere near solving that. And then we're like, oh, we've got AI now. And everyone, it's a bit like I think we talked about this before. Everyone's chasing the ball that way now, aren't they? They were chasing the ball that
I think there are companies and people in the world that obviously have got this stuff, you know, known, sorted. You know, there are people that understand this way more than anyone in this room, probably anyone that we actually will you know, get a chance to network with and communicate with. If we go back to, you know, Big Data London and Tim Peake on his keynote there, you know, you look at what SpaceX have just achieved and you don't think there are people in this world that are using data and technology in a way that some of us could only dream about. Yeah, and they're still using simple tacks like a sponge in the back of a helmet and stuff like this. But, you know, there's so much stuff going on there. That revolution is there. But the problem I think we've got is the access to it in the everyday life in front of our faces. And I call it the Excel problem, right? And this might be some companies' approaches to the market. But all of a sudden, every single user of certain platforms now have prompts in front of them saying, oh, AI can do this for you. Oh, AI, ask AI and answer it. I can't even do a search on a search engine without the top answer now being an accumulated answer from AI. You know, so it's been put in our faces consistently now for us to use it. And in before, I think previously it was working in the background. You know, when you do a search for how to travel somewhere, when you do, like you said, you know, Phil, there's certain things that say, oh, a reminder, you've got dinner at this place and you're 30 minutes away from it, you've got to leave. You know, there was already AI in our lives from these technology giants, but now it's been now it's been opened to the everyday user to use. And in business, that's a really scary thing, because like Jez said, we haven't even caught up to the previous revolutions or the previous changes.
Can I sort of bring some of the I think there was a company that we're working with, I don't know, Eric's in the background running the technology, but they've actually banned all use of AI and throughout the company. You can't touch it.
Oh, come on, that's not policeable. How are they doing that?
Well, they are. Trust me.
They're not. They've said it as a policy. They can't police that. There's no way. They can't stop an employee going on their phone and typing into ChatGPT, seeing the answer, and then typing the answer out on the screen.
I'm not going to do a win-lose with you. Yeah. I'm just telling you what
they're trying to do.
They're not going to name the company. They've made it because the IT department have said, you know, it's a threat. But what I want to just bring back is just bring the threads together that you guys are talking about, and about blind spots, right? Because sometimes when we talk about power skills, we just think it's about communicating better or it's collaborating better. And to a certain extent, I want to throw it back at you that while power skills is some of those things, right? That really isn't the essence of power. Power skills. That really what we're talking about is an emphasis and a change in what we call intelligence. Right? Here in hard skills, intelligence is maths and language. That's kind of the two areas where there's an expertise here. What we're really talking about here as a level of intelligence is the ability to adapt to change. And what you guys have just been describing is the fact that what you've got is we still haven't solved what happened last year. This year looks like it's times 10, and in 2 months, it looks like it's going to be times 50. Well, you're describing it from the shop floor point of view there, Nick, right down to what you took it to helicopter level, Jez, right? And you set the scene there. So what we're talking about is that you're actually living through continuous disruption. Yeah. So therefore, when we talk about power skills is its main essence. Right, is its ability, you know, it's adaptive intelligence. This is what the key point is. It's not, am I going to break change down into manageable parts? It says that every day it's going to be different and it's exponential, right? Okay, whether we're talking about nanotechnology, we're talking about biotech, we're talking about AI. At the moment, the conversation around AI is pretty generic. But when we break it down into industries, as you were saying, Nick, before, some industries are way ahead in understanding this. What we do know that the blind spot is around power skills, is around ability to adapt. And I think that's the sort of golden thread in that brings all of your bits together. I'm not sure, is it?
Isn't it fair to say that there have been information and data specialists working in industry for well over 20 years? And isn't it fair to say that AI has been around for many, many years, right? So it's not that this is new. It's just that it's now in the mainstream. And the problem with that is that back then when people were working with data and when AI was discovered and, you know, being used in these super tech companies, like the ones that we all know many years ago, what I always find quite amazing is that we don't often go to those people or places or businesses to understand how it worked properly and how they were doing it. It seems to me more like we all adopt it and then we just start trying to use it. We don't use what I would call the modern day looking at, well, I suppose, curiosity and trying to understand how is the best way to approach these situations from the people that have been doing it for so long. We just crack on with it. So there's an element of what do you call it? I'm trying to think of the word. I don't know. A bit careless, I guess. Mm. So it comes in mainstream and then we all just are very careless about how we go about using this new stuff or trying to approach these problems or trying to get insights from new data or whatever it might be. And we don't actually understand each individual topic that well in the mainstream yet. So this is where I think you talk about power skills, Toby. Absolutely, constant disruption, a massive inability to be adaptive to such big change. And also the scariest thing is that the workforce today, especially given the way that the new generations are, in my opinion, are not resilient enough. So it's those areas that I think we need to be focused on. I don't think it's just that this stuff is new. It's just that no one's really ever played with it before. And so they're gonna make mistakes, you know, just like kids do. Give them a set of new toys, they'll break it.
It's the shiny toy syndrome.
Shiny new toy. Let's go and break it.
It's going to be back in the toy box in 6 months' time and no one use it for a few years.
But Nick, that's a really good point. It would never surprise me if all of a sudden, like that one company has said, right, we're not having you downloading OpenAI onto your machines, right? So we're going to stop all that happening. You can't get deep minds. You can't do this. All right, Nick's right. You can get them on your phones. You can't stop people doing that, but you can put governance around how people work and operate until a business is comfortable that it can be used in the right way. And that's where legislators and government will start to get involved, because they'll say, if we find that you're doing that, and if we find that you haven't been upskilling your workforce in a way that there's a champion and someone who's accountable for doing this stuff, and you're not trying to get, you know, you're not trying to change the culture in your business in order to be responsible enough with tools that are so powerful, that's an issue for us.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that business is you know wrong in their policy and what they're trying to approach.
I
agree there should be a careful element. What I'm saying is perhaps when we talk about what Toby's talking about, adaptive skills and adapting to change, there is a huge change either here/coming in that business and in other businesses around the world, right? It's your employees are going to be seeing this stuff. Your employees are going to be faced with this information, with these things. And there's very little way to stop them and to really police it. So the communication for what they've given out comes across as like a, we're not going to change, right? At this time, all use of AI is banned because we're setting a strategy that will look at where its best value is for our organization. How do we use it ethically? How do we fit it into our business culture and our processes? And actually, we open the floor to ideas and a forum to ideas of anyone who thinks how AI can influence and improve our business to come forward and discuss it. That is a communication of change and a way that is taken in careful consideration. Just to say we're banning all AI, no one's allowed to use it, it is, you know, it is a very non-adaptive thinking and mindset.
It is it is, from my experience, a classic large organizational response. So to a problem, it's like, you know, it's a hammer to crack a nut, isn't it? We've all seen it before. I've seen this so countless numbers of times where complete innovation is closed down completely because the wrong person at the wrong time did something wrong, and we don't want that to happen again. So it's not about re-educating that element in the business. It's like saying, so to avoid that ever happening again, we're never going to do it. Unfortunately, the genie is well and truly out of the bottle. So that those that want to will always be able to do it. As you said, Nick, you try to ban it, and then all you do is you're just going on your own personal iPad, or you're just going on your own account anyway.
So. Let's pull this. So we're talking about disruption, and we're talking about adaptive change. One of the things that sits in there is this thing that I keep coming up with, right? You know, I keep stealing it, is what we called skilled unawareness. Because what you're describing when we look at the obstacles is what I call the Kodak moment. Because if we look at the history of innovation, of which Clayton Christian is one of the, you know, the godfathers of, right? When he's the one that coined the disruptive innovation, what you've got is, why weren't you innovative? And what we see is what you were just talking about there, Nick, well, what you're talking about, is the culture of not being able to deal with change, and that they approach it almost like the school teacher discovers you're playing with a toy in the classroom and they're banned, right? Because there's no linkage to the new innovations to your strategic objectives, right? How can you be sitting at Kodak and say, we'll think about going into digital later? Because you really need to read up on it, because that's exactly what a group of executives did. The whole world's going digital. No, we'll talk about later. Goodbye, Kodak. All right. And there are examples after examples after examples like that of what you're just describing are the obstacles of dealing with change. So here you've got what you were just saying there, which is the classic experience we've all had in corporates where people make sort of policing decisions within the organization that basically cripple you in terms of if we talk about people are your asset, their learning and their ability to learn and experiment and make mistakes is what's going to move you forward. And you've just cut off that experience. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. I'll just add to that. I think the other thing from my experience is, with change comes fear.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of, in this world, there's the fear of the unknown. And I think there's always, this is probably being really unfair to many of my former kind of C-suite peers and buddies, is that a lot of those decision makers are the ones that are furthest away from the understanding of the impact of things like AI and, you know, modern ways of leadership to a large degree, because they've spent a long period all of their life working in a certain way which has been very successful for them. And suddenly we're turning around and saying we want to challenge that orthodoxy and do it in a very different way. I think we mentioned that before, they're sort of finding it hard to do that. Equally, the other way around, you have got, I go on about this quite a lot, I employ lots and lots of very capable and able graduates that have spent their entire academic career being extremely successful. Straight A students, into university, good degrees, good universities, they come out of it, and then we're told them, oh, that's great, but I want you to think in a completely different way. I now want you to be using your team skills, your creative thinking, your innovation, your communication, and the paucity of some of the people that I've worked with, ability to do those things is calculable. And the amount of investment that I've had to put into kind of retraining some of those into being a, you know, a fully fledged member of a team, is a lot. And I think there's a lot to be said for, and that's where I come back to kind of like the education. There's a lot to now be said for that your ability to be able to recall and remember information isn't going to be as important as it always used to be, which was a skill that a lot of people relied upon.
I think what Jez is saying is that, yeah, no, I think you're right, but I think what Jez is saying that we talk about collaboration, communication, creativity and innovation, but actually there's an element of awareness and consideration. You know, I think as well that we need to be wary of that some of these businesses can't adapt to change that quickly, or it would be reputationally damaging or, you know, brand damaging if they were to try to great, you know, suddenly change lots of things. But I think we've learned in the past through, you know, look at the impact of data science. I never remember it now, but the actual who it was, but ultimately the, you know, first bit of marketing mail letter that went out, given a brochure of baby stuff to 16-year-old because they didn't realize that their 16-year-old was pregnant, but she'd been searching it online, you know. All of a sudden that changed the way we done email marketing or we done newsletter marketing, because obviously something happened because the company tried to be too innovative too quickly. So I think there's an element of considering the environment you're in, considering the people that are in your organization and that you support and work with on a daily basis, considering the risk profile, seeing the innovation and being able to plan out steps of change that work us towards that. So adapting to change doesn't have to be overnight. You know, there is a chance that, I mean, there are some industries where if you don't do it quick enough, if you're the Kodaks or the Blockbusters of this world, you know, don't ignore it. But that doesn't mean you need to all of a sudden overnight adopt, you know, every part of the fifth industrial revolution, suddenly start using IoT sensors, AI, you know, all this stuff. But it's that consideration and ability to see a way forward without hitting that fear factor that I think is one of the power skills.
Can you train for that? I mean, that's where we come back to, isn't it?
Right.
This is kind of idea. Do you have to recruit people that have those skills and those abilities, that full range, that full package, or my argument is that you need to be focusing and you need to be training on that. And that's where I think Jez made the point around you've got this split in 80-20 around hard skills and soft skills. I think that's kind of generous around the sort of soft skills, really. I think that the level of commitment given and the level of quality around the training around soft skills is very haphazard at best, I think. And actually training people within teams, which is something, again, we've mentioned. We all, at every workplace, you work in teams, but we rarely train together and learn together. And I find that quite fascinating that that's still lagging now.
Well, the best scenarios for training soft skills, certainly the ones that we're looking at, or what we consider to be power skills, are often without the use of technology, right? You know, it's what they do in the forces. It's what they do in schools sometimes, you know. It's what they do in sports teams, you know. They're training a lot of that stuff without any use of technology at all. So I would say that the only way that it has to, in my opinion, start with leadership, but you also have to have, I think now, a person that understands, let's say if it's AI we're talking about, but understands that. I think we need to understand as board members or leadership teams, what is that profile? What are the skills that person has? What are their attributes, right? If someone who really understands from a holistic perspective what AI does, how to best use it, when to use it, what the pitfalls of using it, what's the risks of using it, and then has in their previous experience adopted that within a company, then we're looking at the profile of a person that looks like it could be someone successful using it, right? And if you've got that on the leadership team, then once we understand what it is, then we start trying to train the rest of the leadership team through simulation, like what we do, and then you start spreading it down into the company, right? So, you know, we know that a lot of workforces won't often adopt new ways of working unless they see the leadership doing it, right? You have to lead from the front. So, you know, let's get that bit right. Let's show people how we now work. Let's make sure people are feeling comfortable and they feel like they're in a safe space to do this stuff and to work in a slightly different way and to be more creative and to, you know, showcase their problem solving skills and whatever it might be. And consideration, I think, to Nick's point, is a really, really good shout. It's not a word that I'd heard on this podcast so far. I think absolutely we should be considering what we're doing. And so, you know, you create the mindset, but we've got to understand, what does a person look like? What are we looking for? We've got a massive list of power skills that we all look at about training, right? Through Sea Change, which is brilliant. But if you're trying to move in that way, so you've got a company that wants to adopt AI, like what does that look like? Because I don't think anybody knows exactly what that looks like yet, unless you're a person that's been doing it for quite some time. And we need to get that into the leadership teams.
I think that's a good point to start to bring things together for the end. I think what you're talking about, if you don't know what it looks like, it's a blind spot.
Yeah, it is a blind spot. And that's why that you make mistakes with blind spots. You have car crashes because of blind spots. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But isn't that, sorry, Toby, and I know we're going to go there, but I want to go, one of the things I've experienced, and I think I've been guilty of this myself in the past, is the fear of being able to say, I just don't know, when you're in a senior leadership position. Yeah. And that ability just say, actually, guys, I haven't got a bloody clue. I don't know, but this is a blind spot and something we should know about. And having that ability to say that, because I was always employed that I had the knowledge. So if I was called to go to the board and they said, Phil, what do you think about this? And my first response is, I ain't got a clue. It's not going to go down too well.
There's a good book that talks about this sort of stuff. That one.
Exactly. Yeah. But these are things that need to, people don't appreciate that you can teach these things, you can learn, and that is a valuable skill, you know, the ability just to say, I don't know and I don't understand. It's the same as when you employ a bloody expert into your organization. I've seen this time and time again. You get them to come in, then they give their opinion to a board. The board doesn't quite like it and then kind of rides roughshod over it. And you're thinking, you got the expert in. The expert's told you this. And then because you don't like what the expert has said that you've recruited, you're going to ignore their advice.
Which is what's going to happen in this scenario.
Yeah,
some boards will adopt it from someone who knows what they're talking about. And someone will go, you know, some boards will just go, nah, that's, let's just crack on how we are. We'll be fine.
But yeah, exactly.
To their detriment.
On the blind spot piece, it's an interesting analogy because, you know, okay, yes, now we have some, let's say, data science and or some kind of mechanisms where a camera can look in your blind spot and give you an indication of whether there's something in your blind spot or not to try and stop you pulling across, right? But that doesn't stop accidents in blind spots happening. That hasn't solved the problem with vans or lorries blind spots, right? It's a problem that's been in the automotive industry for many a generation or many a years. It still
and
happens.
So have cameras.
but we all drive. Most people drive for a very long time. And actually, all we've done is learn how to adapt to certain situations on the road. That could be a blind spot. I go to a different country. You know, go to Paris. Drive there on the different side of the road. My ability to act in a different manner because of the environment around me has to change. I now have to think, oh, well, the blind spot might be that way because someone might be overtaking me from that side and not that side.
And it's
an interesting analogy of that power skills we're talking about, of being put into unfamiliar and semi-similar environments. And what tools do we have in our minds to address the best action to take in that unfamiliar environment? How can we draw similarities between different experiences we've had and say, maybe this is the way to go forward? I don't know if it's going to, I might fail, I might be wrong, but based on these observations, this is critically how I think we should move ahead.
What you're talking about there, as we start to bring this together, is you're talking about the ability to unlearn and relearn.
Yeah.
All right. And that's a superpower. And it's something that's not taught. It's something that you learn if you want to survive. It's a survival skill. whether it's in sport or whether it's in business or whether it's in life, your ability to adapt is based on those principles, primarily because your experience is organized into pre-established patterns. And unless you know that, unless you really fundamentally understand that and your awareness is linked to that, then you're stuck. You keep on going around in circles, right? Mm-hmm. So bringing this really good, I think, and fruitful discussion and difficult discussion together, because we're talking about that which we don't know. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to explain to other people that which we don't know and be honest on there. You know, to sort of, if you guys can give, you know, a 1 minute, if you're going to be a challenge, that's adaptive intelligence, a 1 minute quick summary of what you want to leave the podcast with. Phil?
That's a good challenge. I would say it's the fear of change is what's going to stop you from moving forward. And the fear of change is what's going to stop you from being a success in using AI. And I think that those power skills will help you close that gap. That wasn't a very eloquent way of saying it, but
it doesn't need to be.
Could do.
Yeah. Jess?
Slow down to speed up, Toby.
Yeah.
Live by it. You know, I just think we just need to just take a step back, have a look at what we can do with AI that is, back to Phil's point, more around lifting and shifting. Let's use AI to become efficient and make better processes and build some trust in this new tool before we move to that next step, and basically put some good governance around the organizations for companies, really try and understand what skills are required to adopt AI properly for the future. So we've got those points in place and the skills growing in our organizations. And then ultimately as well, like, try not to fear it. You know, if we can create a safe space, then people will feel much more comfortable and then they'll be more excited about it. And I think we'll get better results from using it in the future.
You're going to get it wrong. That's the key, you know. But it's that, like, it's the ability to know when you got it wrong, and then to pivot, isn't it? It's like, don't not try something. It's a bit like that company that you said, Toby, that, you know, has put the moratorium on no one having AI. It's like, you know, don't, some things will go wrong. It is inevitable, but it's how you react to that is the key.
I do think, though, Phil, there are elements of AI which you can't play with without there being a huge risk involved. Mm. So I'm in agreement with you. Definitely play with it. Don't stop people playing with it and fail using it. But
understand what your guardrails are.
What your guardrails are.
So, you know, don't ask. Yeah, exactly. Don't go out there to do a smart bit of data science and publish it, then realize afterwards it was all completely wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah. Yeah.
Nick?
I think for me, it's coming back to that word in the fifth revolution is human-centric, right? I think the biggest value and asset we all have beyond technology is our people. And those that win with this battle and this innovation and AI are not going to be those that go off and buy these off-the-shelf, you know, AI tools and elements like that. They're going to be the ones that use their people to come up with the ideas. And I'll leave you with one story. We work with a London Borough Council, and in their smart cities team, they have, and this other councils might be doing this, but they have put the radio planning analysis equipment that used to drive around in radio planning cars on their garbage trucks, because the trucks drive every street every week in random patterns, different times of the day, and therefore can do 3G, 4G, 5G planning and analysis for mobile networks across all networks all the time. That is a pure example of where you can use technology, IoT, you can use, you know, existing technologies, you can use data science, and you can use kind of environmental thinking to create a process that's more sustainable. AI didn't come up with that idea. Someone in the council said, yeah, "Hey, why don't we do this with our garbage trucks?" Won't that be great? Won't that be more sustainable?
Creativity right there.
That's the creativity piece. So for me, the people that win with AI and the fifth industrial revolution, not just AI, you know, as I said, IoT, advanced technologies, the people that win with that are not going to be those that go out there and just use what everyone else is using. It's using the internal intelligence you have within your people and their innovation to change that will help you win.
That went bad. That was a minute, Nick.
Yeah.
Exactly. I've been using an AI timer to cut time. I'm getting a lot better with my timings for these things.
So listen, guys, as we approach the end, I want to say thank you very much to Nick, Jez, and Phil. I think it was a stimulating conversation. I want to talk to our viewers that are looking at what we don't script this. All right. This is us talking from our hearts and finding subjects that are meaningful. And that's our promise to you. So if you can really help us out, subscribe below. And if you like it as well, please press like. And our promise to you is we'll work on bringing you better content, more meaningful, more wrapped around trying to understand how to adapt in this incredible world of change, an exciting world of change as well, a difficult world of change as well. So thank you very much. See you on the next one.
Thanks, Toby.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.